Hello, and welcome back to Volume 3 of To All My Darlings. We're talking about Miss McIntosh, My Darling. This is a holiday week, so for anybody who's celebrating, happy Indigenous Day, happy Thanksgiving. Hope you have a great time. Eat a lot. I've been working with diabetic-friendly recipes, and I think I've hit the jackpot. I've got pecan pie and pumpkin cheesecake, and they both just smell great and are still diabetic friendly, so I think we'll have a really good time this holiday. This will be the only last one for this week, and then I should be back next week, no problem. We are covering the part 6, women's experiences. I did add mastectomy, and because Miss McIntosh had one breast removed, and I found that it's called ovectomy, because she talks about, so I thought it was hysterectomy, but it was not. When I looked it up in the book, it's she says specifically that her ovaries were removed, so an ovarectomy. So I don't know, and there's not a reason given for why this happens. Cancer, cysts, tumor, I don't know. There's no reason given for it. And so it is very specific in a way, because when I looked it up, it's considered castration. So it's considered like a female version of castration, which would be castration in males. So it's considered a female version. So why so specifically targeting the ovaries? I do not know. Other than Young said she wanted to take away everything from Miss McIntosh that made her female, that made her a woman, and then what would her, and then I guess, and deal with the question, well, what does that make her? How does she go about still trying to live a life where gender matters, whether you're male, female matters, the expectations, especially during the time that Young was writing, those expectations are very much rigid in what you were supposed to, what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to behave, what your duties were. So, thinking of that, we are covering wife. Wife is used over 150 times. Vera imagines what the wife of the bus driver Moses is like. Madge feels she's been deceived as Homer's wife. Throughout the chapters they are in, Madge is referred to as a wife who reminds Homer who he is and that he cannot have Jacqueline. Yet though he slept at her side and might so easily evade her as only the husband can evade the wife. Homer has a mortal wife as opposed to a spiritual one in the form of Jacqueline, who died of tuberculosis. Homer had never touched his wife's cold heart and never would. Homer, he could not be influenced by her, his living wife, whose conscience suffered many twinges. But what would this poor boy know of a former love unless his wife reminded him that though love could never die, the object of his love might die, might change, might alter her looks? You had opened your eyes, and you saw who your old husband was, and you saw your old wife with a smile painted on her face. Gertrude is the wife of brothers Rudolph, that's his name, Rudolph and Josh. Gertrude, as the wife of brothers Rudolph and Josh, kills them, or she's accused of killing them. How should I put that? Or is suspected? I want to say she's suspected of killing them. Miss McIntosh is training Vera to be a humble wife. Miss McIntosh says no wife ever knows her husband. She added almost at the door, until after she is married to him, and then it is too late. No husband knows his wife. There are many gay deceivers. They deceive each other in their own sad hearts. That is the fact. The preacher in Vera's dream recites the marriage vows. Vera says she might be a little shoemaker's wooden wife. Miss McIntosh says a good husband makes a good wife, she said, and a good wife makes a good husband. And the wife is the key and the husband is the door which will not close. And a husband loves a silent wife, and our innocence does not long outlive our modesty. Miss McIntosh wondered what kind of wife Vera would be. She wonders about her housewifely duties, her share of the bargain. what kind of wife will ever, so it's a bargain that you make. You get to do all the chores and he gets to go off and he makes the money. He's the breadwinner. What kind of wife will you ever make to a good man who must earn his living in the busy places and be seen by his fellow men? Pharaoh must learn to cook and sew for any possible husband, to serve my lord and master, to be a modest wife to the poor little carpenter or shoemaker who might yet make his appearance. Good housekeeping, if one was an industrious and humble wife, could surely begin, Miss McIntosh had always said, with these old odds and ends. Many a wife never saw her husband except when he was clothed. Many a husband never saw his wife. Cousin Hannah, who had never been in a relationship that anyone knew of, was the confidant of wives. She heard all their conversations. Or he might imagine that his veiled wife was beautiful long after her beauty had ceased, when her veil concealed the visage of the naked skull, and doubtless this was why in the Oriental countries there was polygamy, for a man could not be sure what manner of woman he loved. Cousin Hannah would never have died if she had not pitched her tent. If she had not stayed her journey, she was wedded to her true love and found her body and her spirit, her husband or her wife, and the wound of creation was healed and the great abyss was closed, and there was that harmony such as had never been on earth. Mr. Spitzer did not know if Cousin Hannah was the crusader upon some distant quest in search of a great Raja's jewel, a crown jewel which should be plucked from a crown of gold, or the crusader's sleeping wife, bound by a girdle of iron, locked by an iron key, waiting for her love to return, not knowing that her love was dead. And maybe an old mariner chartlessly drifting over the body of a sleeping wife. From an old suffragette captain tossing on her bed, he had learned much from her whose name was hyphenated. Perhaps at that very time she had lost her love. From her for whom the hyphen was more important than the two names it joined. Joined as man and wife, as starlight and star, for the hyphen was all. From her who long ago had paused in a broken melody and would not take up her music in this life. Cousin Hannah had crept into many a bed coming between husband and wife who would have found her a better husband than her husband was, and perhaps the husband would have loved her as a better wife if ever he had found her, if she had not been herself the lost love. And although it might seem strange that she should be the wife to the husband and the husband to the wife, yet was this not more normal than that she should be the husband to the husband, the wife to the wife? Perhaps there were many twisted threads, skeins of neither one nor the waves, like sea medusas sleeping in their watery graves. Think of Mr. Spitzer's easel. He was neither husband nor wife. All right, well, this didn't work out. Okay. I need to take something out. Okay, so I shortened that. And then Mr. Spitzer, he was neither husband nor wife. He had not been like that old knight. He had not been like that old knight Tancred, who had hacked tree trunks with his flaming sword until the voice of his dead wife cried inside, "Do you not hack me enough in life?" Yet what Mr. Spitzer might hear, for no dead wife might ever reproach him that he hacked or hacked not. Perhaps for every great shah under his dome of mother of pearl, there was a wife he had not met or had passed over in his choices, had never lifted the veil, and perhaps this is the true mystery of love, that there should be a supernumerary love, a wife unknown, one of whom he had not seen the face touched by a dying flame. Another man had said that his wife had cuckolded him, for though he had not known it, she had never slept with him. She had been sleeping all her life with his brother, his identical brother, while this poor fellow had been outside sobbing in the freezing rain. Okay, so there's that one. There's that one with the man. Okay, so that he has, there's identical brothers, and she's sleeping with the brother, not him. Then there's another sub-story, sub-plot, and I don't know if it made it in here. But I remember there's another one that I thought was rather funny, and that the husband complained that he was married to identical, he was married to his wife, who was identical sisters, they were twins, and claimed that they changed places in bed every night so that they were insatiable. So I thought that was funny. I don't think I don't know that it made it in here. My wife might not have been mentioned in that one. Miss McIntosh, typo. Thought Vera best to marry a little shoemaker. If you want to be a happy wife and not to see him, for he will walk about like his shoes and seldom visit you. Have you learned your lessons in the darkness, your geography and arithmetic and nautical science and household shopping and the hunting of the caribou? Or will this be just another day of darkest ignorance such as may befit not even a poor man's wife when the wedding feast is over? Should man be wedded to a bald wife? A bald husband would be less objectionable. Mr. Bonebreaker said that according to the Bible that the wife should stand forth before her husband not as one who wears fine ornaments or braids gold threads into her hair, but as the inner man revealed. Mr. Weed had two wives. The first one killed herself. The tavern landlord is married. Mr. Weed tells stories of men who have killed their wives and or families. Madge reminds her father, and the oldest child of Mr. Weed reminds him of their dead wives. Mr. Weed tells more stories. Okay, Madge reminds her father. Okay, hold on. I think I did this wrong. Of their dead wives. And the oldest child of Mr. Weed reminds him of their dead wives. I'm trying to do both of this. Oh. I'm going to split that sentence up. I don't think it's clear the way I wrote it. Mr. Weed tells more stories of a sheriff who's caught in a love triangle with his wife and a young prisoner. A man used egg beaters to stay closer to his dead wife. Esther tells stories of wives that are sterile and the fathers, but she is not. Esther's mother was described as a wife that was artificially impregnated. So, wife? Not that happy. I mean, it goes from either just these off, oddball kind of stories to Vera's being specifically trained to be a good wife. Wives are supposed to be silent. And this idea that the idea that is repeated several times, that even if you're married, the wife never knows the husband and the husband never knows the wife. So it's even in this relationship that is considered like one of the closest relationships you'll ever have in your life, and possibly the longest, other than with your parents, that you'll never truly know them. So that's kind of strange, but that's kind of a strange way of looking at it. Okay. In the history of wives in the U.S., a housewife or in New England, a good wife, refers to the married woman's economic and cultural roles. Under legal rules of coverture, a wife had no separate legal identity. Everything she did was under the authority of her husband. He controlled all the money, including any dowry or inheritance she might have brought to the marriage. She had certain legal rights to a share of the family property when the husband died. She was in charge of the household, and depending on wealth, would also include, why did I have this? Okay, the housewife's domain, depending upon wealth, would also include cellars, pantries, brew houses, milk houses, wash houses, and butterflies. Okay, That's interesting, but since butterflies are pretty prominent in the story. She was responsible for home manufacturing of clothing, candles, and foodstuffs. The garden, poultry, cows, dogs, mothers, responsible for the spiritual and civic well-being of her children. Good housewives raised good children who would become upstanding citizens in the community. Legal status and societal norms allowed for husbands to exert physical power over their wives, which could and did result in violence. Few housewives were able to file for divorces. Judith Sargent Murray published the early and influential essay on the equality of the sexes in 1790, blaming poor standards and female education as the root of women's problems. And then we go into more of pushing for women's rights by Macaulay, Wollstonecraft, John Neal, also filled in starting in the 1820s. 1848 was the Seneca Falls Convention. Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott joined in 1840. So the Women's Rights Convention was in 1850 and met until the start of the Civil War. Kristen Hoggison's essay, Cosmopolitan Domesticity, Importing the American Dream, went from 1865 to 1920, sets out how American women in their capacity as homemakers participated in international relations. After the Civil War, there was a boom in interior design writing, with many advocating the adoption of foreign styles throughout the household. Interior design in middle-class houses was seen at this time as an important means of self-expression. Shown by the fact that a popular design manual commented that a woman was judged by how she kept the interior of her home. Women wanted to show their status through the extravagant interior design of their homes. The cult of domesticity was a new ideal of womanhood that emerged at this time. This ideal rose from the reality that a 19th century middle class family did not have to make what it needed in order to survive, as previous families had to. And therefore, men could now work in jobs that produced goods or services while their wives and children stayed at home. Juggling their roles as mothers, and then they had the baby boom. This was also during that time, that baby boom, World War II, and the jobs they filled while the men were at war. Women strained to complete all tasks set before them. The war caused cutbacks in automobile and bus service and migration from farms and towns to munitions centers. Stress came. Oh, so this is more about World War II and how women had to move. Millions of wives tried to relocate near their husbands' training camps. At the end of the war, most of the munitions making jobs ended. Many factories were closed, others retooled for civilian production. In some jobs, women were replaced by returning veterans who did not lose seniority because they were in service. Many women worked in machinery factories, and more were taken out of the workforce. So it's in this way. So I think I put a lot of the. A lot of this was showing how society really stressed on women, how they were supposed to behave, what they were supposed to be like, and Miss McIntosh really kind of embodies that. Like, she's trying to force Vera to fit this mold, one that she couldn't do, second that her mother Catherine didn't do, that just had circles. She was wealthy enough to have services to do it for her, but Vera is to take that role. That is what she is being trained for. Okay, women's rights. So included is a link to a timeline of women's legal rights, which represents formal legal changes and reforms regarding women's rights in the United States. That includes actual law reforms as well as other formal changes. Another, but if you want to look for something that specifically addresses a woman's body, the boundaries of her body is a must-read book, in which just goes through all the laws that have been passed regarding a, literally regarding a woman's right to her body. Women's role, gender role, women's work. I put this in here because Young really did not hear. She flipped those roles all the time. Either it was just dismissing them. Like it's either man can be woman can be man. And she did that all throughout the book. So in the book, as far as women's work or a woman's role, good housekeeping was a primary thing Vera was taught to do by Miss McIntosh. This was done by Miss McIntosh doing chores. So this is good housekeeping, this training to be a good wife. This was done by having having Vera do chores as if Miss McIntosh was the husband and Vera was the wife. Vera describes the 7 years of her tutelage as playing at good housekeeping. Vera must learn the essentials of good housekeeping now and how to make ends meet. And I must begin saving candles for the darkness. Vera describes their lives were necessarily crowded with the austerity of good housekeeping. The old clam digger who worked for Mr. Spitzer was a poor housekeeper. Good housekeeping also was much to be desired. Miss McIntosh said good housekeeping was every woman's privilege and duty, or almost every woman's. A man, when he came home from his work in a hard world, wanted to find peace. And this pretty much sums up what the attitude was about women, the cult of domesticity, the women's places in the home, the whole thing after World War II, after letting women get, well, needing women to get jobs. Then the pressure, so the pressure was to force women to work at that time, and then society put the pressure to put women back in the house, put the genie back in the bottle, because men were supposed to do that, and you were supposed to keep this peaceful place for him when he came home. So a man, when he came home from his work in a hard world, wanted to find peace. He wanted to find that there was food on the table, that the bed had been made. She thought even an industrious and humble wife could be good at housekeeping. So then I go into a lot of gender roles, what was expected, marriage roles, women's work, which is stereotypical jobs for women, especially teaching governess, as Miss McIntosh is, nanny, daycare worker, professional positions such as teacher or nurse. Sorry, my husband's having a very good time at work. This bias not only impacts the ways people view women in these fields, but it also creates an inner bias where women are less likely to pursue a career outside of the paths that are chosen to her. Women are seen as less competent and successful in jobs that are considered fit for men. Both likability and competence are needed to be truly successful in these fields, which creates yet another barrier for women. They not only have to be good at it, they have to like you. gender is a complex subject, and I didn't tackle it as much as I thought I was going to. So gender is a complex subject, and I put more links so that people could explore it. And it's mainly challenging how patriarchy strives and society at large, or how that government runs, to control bodies and how people think about their bodies and other bodies. So, interestingly enough, when I was looking up stuff, because there have been some, I don't remember the name, it might have been Fuchs herself, that have written about Miss McIntosh, my darling, and have said that she is a trans woman. And that's what... And that was her definition of Miss McIntosh, that she was a trans woman. Transvestite. So, and at the time, I really didn't know any of the history on trans men or women and how all that came about. As far as the history of it, I know currently what's going on, but I didn't know any history of it. So I thought it was very interesting when I did look into the history of it, which I'm pretty sure, yes, I put a link here, is a that I think may have influenced Young, because she did write about, she did claim to read the New York Daily News daily, as well as the other two newspapers. And there was a Christine Jorgensen, who's written about the New York Daily News in the 1950s, a newspaper that Young said she read regularly, who became the first public trans woman in the U.S. So there is a history before the 1950s of women and men. Whether it was cross-dressing, whether it was actual being a trans woman or a man, I read up on it, but I didn't pay too much close attention because it wasn't during the time that Young was writing the book. But Christine Jorgensen, and plus, you know, that just wasn't done. You know, like, you didn't go public with this. You didn't say this is what happened. But woman actually, let's see, I believe she had the surgery. Anyways, I gave a link to her story. But in the 1950s, she came out. She was a woman, and she was because they wanted to annul, she was married, and they wanted to annul her marriage, and they didn't want to recognize it. And so she was fighting for that recognition, and that's why she went public. So I thought it was really interesting that was a popular story during the time that Young was working on the book. So I wondered about that. Even though she said she didn't base Miss McIntosh, I think it was an amalgamation. She said Miss McIntosh was based on amalgamation of like three different governesses or nannies that she knew. Something like that came up in an interview. Women's suffrage. So because of cousin Hannah, and how that is in the book, I did put, I know I've put some things in volume 1 and 2, and in this one, I just focused on the history of the, a very short history of the, women's suffrage movement. I'm just going through that. Okay. Yeah, because I know I covered that in volume 1 and 2, so I didn't want to repeat that here. So I just included the some of the history in the United States. And that's it. Good. I wanted to get done with part 6. This week. Okay, so that's it for part 6, and now we're going to get into that. I think the really good stuff, the stuff that was like that really thought was a, at least for me, felt like a real key to unlocking Miss McIntosh, My Darling, and that was philosophy. So part 7 will start 100 pages of philosophy that I believe, or I feel is reflected in Miss McIntosh, My Darling. Hopefully, you'll agree or not agree. That's fine. Hopefully it'll give you some food for thought. And, maybe if you have some other ideas, please share. All right. Thank you very much. My gosh, my husband is having a good time at work. if you're celebrating the holidays, happy holidays, stay safe, stay healthy, and I will be back. Thanks for listening. Bye.